Last week's problems incomplete because hey, there's Mina. Hello, welcome. And well, you want to make room for Mina? I think we have a seat here.
Okay, and then this is yours.
Yeah. Somehow it looks smaller today. I don't know why.
They just keep rearranging the tables.
Yeah. I don't know. But I can, so maybe I can move, give you a bit more space. Move a bit. Okay, so last week we didn't get to finish the last problem because the quantum gravity people interrupted us. But let's try to do it because it's an important and interesting problem, and it's not really that hard. You just read, it's not just very easy to think clearly when people are waiting at the door wanting to kick you out. So let's try to finish that. And I think this week's problems are, they've been easy, haven't they? Right? Yeah. I mean, the hard part would have been calculating the Einstein tensor, but if you use mathematical and therefore then that's not the hard part.
If you didn't know we were allowed to, then it's hard again.
But didn't I say that since all these sensors can be computed for us?
Yeah, I didn't know that was permission to use.
Oh, really? I just don't know it exists. Yeah. But I guess that's also part of the problem, the part of you have to decide what's the best way of doing things. You're allowed to do everything, I guess, if you haven't been explicit enough. Well, I mean, you already have the solution, so you're even allowed to look at this, well, the Parmenides problem. So, using mathematics and Maple are allowed. Okay, so then, I guess hopefully we can get some extra time to finish the first problem, oh, sorry, the last problem of last week. So, and I'm sorry, I haven't gotten around to grade the problems. There are lots of them sitting in my office. Hopefully next week maybe we're going to have lots. I'm going to give a lot of problems back to you. And Mark is back, so he's going to start grading his problems. So what was left back from last week was calculating the deflection angle of a photon that's traveling by a black hole. So I guess does any of you remember how to do it, or you need that? You need your solutions to actually do it. I can actually go to my office and get it. Everybody's silent.
Vaguely, don't.
It's pretty involved.
Yeah, I don't think I'd be able to reproduce it all from memory. Mm-hmm. Without completely redoing it, as if from scratch.
Wait, remember, this is not very different from a problem that we did at the beginning of the class, this is the first session, which is basically a scattering of a particle, the scrap pitch on a scattering of particle of another one. Of course, that was Newtonian gravity as opposed to relativistic gravity for photons. But it's the same problem, a slightly different equations involved. Well, I mean, it's actually the same equations, but you arrive them from different assumptions. But you're going to get the same answer. So I wanted to think about this a little bit before doing this, but let's see what we have. So we have a metric. So let's see if we can do this quickly. And so let's set G equal to C equal to 1 so that I don't have to carry around all these constants. And so I'm assuming a theta is pi over 2, so this I'm doing an equatorial plane. So I ignore the d theta squared. And this is a spectral symmetric, it makes sense because if you're equatorial plane, you're all over the remaining equatorial plane. So the lesson is that you can, what we learned is that you can use this Lagrangian, so action being, you call it dtl. And L is just 1 minus 2m over r t dot squared minus 1 minus 2m over r inverse r dot squared minus r squared r dot squared. Where dot is the derivative with respect to the, some affine parameter. It would be proper time for massive particles. That would be something else for photons. But dot is not derivative with respect to time. It's specific to the proper time. That's why this is not zero. So this is the Lagrangian that basically describes the evolution. And we decided that since this parameter is arbitrary, basically from the outset, and actually in order to be able to use this action instead of this action, it depends that the two give the same answer if L is constant. And this is something that you showed in Horace showed this, I think. Yeah, but it's all of you did in your following question. I think you showed this a couple of weeks ago. So you can use this L to basically minimize this action to find the trajectories of particles in this metric. Now, of course, we all know what is if minimizing action, what it leads to. We use the Euler Lagrange equations, which in general are something like partial L by partial. Partial L by partial. Let's call this parameter lambda. So this is like xi means d by d lambda. So these are Euler Lagrange equations. So whenever you minimize an action, now the interesting thing about this metric is that we don't even have to solve these equations, because first of all we decided that L is constant, and so this is one equation. This is one constant. So we know that this combination is constant. But the other two things that the other two things we can notice is that this is independent of t and phi. So partial A by partial phi, partial L by partial t is zero. So that means partial L with respect to phi dot and t dot is constant. So these are the two other constants that Farber derived for us. So let's call this L, the angular momentum, which is partial L by partial phi dot, which is minus r squared phi dot. And my conventions might be different from the books or Farber's, but this is just the derivative. And I guess there is a 2, so I'm just going to ignore the 2. I guess I'm going to put the 2 here, let's say. The 2 everywhere. That's it. Well, let's put 2 here. So they cancel. And then the partial A by partial T dot, let me call that E, some kind of energy. It's basically because this action is time independent, your energy is conserved, what was called a capital A. And that gives you, I can again put the 2 there, just to get rid of the 2s. Get 1 minus 2m over r. And let's put a minus sign here, so the minus sign will pass, so it is positive. And there was another two cancels. Okay, so these are three equations, and you have three unknowns, t dot, r dot, and phi dot. So this gives you basically everything that you need. Right? Okay, so now what is it that we need? We want to find the deflection angle for particles that are moving fast, basically, by the black hole. So we already assume from the outset that deflection angle is small. These are small perturbations, basically. The particles should travel on a straight line if there was no mass. And we want to assume that these are just small perturbations, 2m over r, that only slightly deflects the trajectory from the time. So let's derive the conservation equation, an equation for dr by d phi. And or you can do dr by dt, the two are related by just by the angle of the tangent. So let's actually get something by the formula, some equation for dr by dt, which is r dot divided by t dot. Okay, so r dot, so let me use that for the first equation. L is 1 minus 2m over r. Dot is given here, it's just energy divided by 1, 2m over r, and r squared. And so the next term, 1 minus 2m over r, inverse. Dr by dt squared times t dot squared, which is the same thing. Squared. And what else? And then we have minus r squared phi dot squared, which is r squared l squared divided by r squared. This is the constant. Okay? So I can get dr by dt, dr divided by dt, which is gonna be, well, let's see if I can do it in one go. So it's gonna be L minus E squared divided by 1 minus 2m over r. And plus L squared divided by R squared. Okay, so this is going to be equal to, and there's going to be a minus sign. So I guess I can put the minus sign here. Plus, minus, minus. And then there will be dr by dt squared. Times e squared divided by 1 minus 2m over r. Okay? So this is energy conservation. This is the new meridian of the energy conservation. And we already knew this from freshman mechanics, I believe, from whatever it is. For Newtonian particles, that there is energy conservation. There is B squared, and there's angular momentum term, which you can plug in, substitute from the angular momentum that is conserved. You have something, you know about something like this in Newtonian mechanics, and you can, it is just a slightly modified in this case. So let's see if we can actually make this similar to what we know from Newtonian mechanics. So Newtonian mechanics, if I use the same definition of L and But this is not going to be the same energy, but maybe we're going to see. But just if I use the same definition of L, let me see. In Newtonian mechanics, this is small. And if lambda is the same as the affine parameter is the same as time, B is 1, basically. Right? So let's have that in mind. So in Newtonian mechanics, we have energy is 1/2, or 2 energy is dr by dt squared minus or plus L squared divided by R squared minus gm or 2gm over r. Or I can take this to the left-hand side. I have, in the Newtonian mechanics, I have dr by dt squared is 2e minus L squared divided by r squared. So are these similar to each other, or can we draw similarities? So this is for Newtonian mechanics. Newtonian. For relativistic, we have basically more or less the same thing. And let me assume that these are small numbers. T2 above r is small, so you're far away from the horizon of the black hole. So what you get is it's going to be something like 1 minus 6 m over r divided by e squared, right? And then we have e squared. Let me absorb this e squared. Take it inside the parenthesis. So it's just 1 plus 2 m over r. 1 plus 2 m over r. Right? Minus L squared divided by. Is there 2? No, there's 1. Just e squared r squared. And minus L divided by. So they are getting kind of similar, not exactly the same, but so what I've done is just I assume 2m over r is small, and I've done just Taylor expansion to take, I've kept the first term as linear, 2m over r. Here, when I take it to the other side, and there's e squared in the denominator, that I took it inside the brackets. And I've also Taylor expanded this. And that's it. So they are kind of similar. And again, so you have one here, you have one here, you can absorb this one, you can multiply these two together. The product of these two m over r terms cancel, are small. Let me see. I'm actually thinking that this term and this term probably cancel each other, almost cancel each other, because both L and E are 1 in the Newtonian limit, or close to 1 in the Newtonian limit. So this combination is a constant, 1 minus L divided by E, but it's not exactly 1. It's not exactly 0. It's close to 0. It's much smaller than 1, but it's not exactly 1, because you do really have, it's not exactly 0 because of there are relativistic corrections. So this is actually kind of like this constant energy. So this is the kind of a correspondence. And so let's see what we're left with. If we call this combination 2E, which is about the same thing as we had here. What we get is dr by dt square is 2e, well, let's see, times, so I'm calling 1 minus L divided by carry E to the 2e latter. So this is 1 minus 6m over r. Plus, I think actually I can just ignore this to 6m over r, because, let's see, why can I ignore that? Yeah, because if this is small, this is just almost 1, that's all that matters. So, if I just ignore this, then these two equations are just the same. If you identify y minus L divided by carry E by 2B2E, and this is of order 1 close to 1, and G, I assume, is 1, so this is, so I can Newtonian limit these two equations are the same. Now, what happens for a photon? That's the question that we were supposed to answer. So what's the difference between photons and non-relativistic particles in this treatment? What should I do? Yeah. Question, you guys all have done this problem. You already handed it.
Well, in the way I did it, well, I had another E, which was equal to m square over E square, plus energy square. As we had m there, which was the mass of the particle.
You had a mass of the particle, right?
Yes. We could put it zero, and E would be zero. And we had just one component L.
But the photons don't have zero energy.
They have zero mass.
Yeah, zero mass, but not zero energy.
Yes, but you can define your E and L another way, such that the new E you have is the fraction of it's m over E, m over energy, and if mass is zero, that E would be zero. You have just one constant in your, which would be the angular momentum.
So. Yeah, there are different energies here, and some of them actually you can look at these constants. Some of them are that actual energy, but others are energy in the rest frame, which manage for photons. Now, in this case, so for non-relativistic particles, we saw that this capital E actually is 1, because if this is a small, if the potential is small, and if you assume L is 1, basically if your affine parameter is your proper time, then this dot is with respect to the proper time. L is 1, so if L is 1, that means that basically T dot is 1, because for non-relativistic particles, these terms are invisible, this is invisible, T dot is 1, and E is 1. For photons, what we know about photons is that they move on the light cone. That means ds squared is zero, right? So why do we know that? Basically, this is saying that they are moving with the speed of light. That means that this is equal to this. Basically, this term cancels these terms, since photons are moving with the speed of light. Right. It's just saying that dx by dt is 1, right? You could also get the same thing if you plug in mass somewhere here, the particle mass. I didn't do this, so I wonder if I could have done the particle, targeting the particle mass. If I express this constant in terms of the particle mass somehow, then I could have gotten, I probably would have gotten, or could have taken the limit. But it's easier to just do it from the acid that sets L equal to 0. And what happens here if I set L equal to 0 is that, so this is for, Newtonian, this is for particles, or massive particles, let's say. For massless particle, I have the same equations up to here, and well, let me keep this. This is still there, but I could ignore it for massive particles. But for massless particles, actually, I might not be able to ignore it. For massive particles, this L vanishes, right? And yeah, so that L vanishes. The equation that I have instead is dr by dt squared is 1 minus 6m over r and non plus 2m over r minus l squared divided by u squared r squared. Let me just, for clarity, call this capital L, because this L is different from this L. This is actually like L squared divided by u squared. I can that E also goes to 0. But this combination, this ratio remains constant for masses. It remains fine for masses properties. So if I just use this convention and call this capital L squared, so this is the usual angular momentum in units of time instead of the in this affine fraction. Then I'm going to end up with something that looks like this. It's going to be 1 minus 4m over r minus L squared. All right. This is just, again, Taylor expansion. So I'm ignoring the term that's. These two terms are comparable because this is. These are both, this is potential energy, this is angular kinetic energy, they are comparable to each other. And actually, is that true? But as for, let's see. I know that for large distance, large r's, both of these are much smaller than 1. So anyway, so this term times this term is going to be negligible compared to the terms that are linear over the linear in m over r. So there will be a term that looks like m squared divided by r squared, which are much smaller than this. Okay, so here we go. So this is the difference. This is the Newtonian. This is the Newtonian version. This is very similar to this. If I ignore this 6m over r. And this is the photon version. So they look actually very similar, don't they? They do look similar, except for that here I have two energy, and here I have 1. That's the only difference between these two. And I'm sorry, and then there is plus 2m over r here, and there is minus 4m over r here. Okay? So does this mean that the deflection angle is negative because I'm sending the sign of mass? What do you think? this thing somewhere. So the conclusion that you were supposed to arrive at is that the deflection angle is twice as what you get for non-relativistic particles. Or for, well, twice as much as what you get from internal mechanics, which is what I had up here.
But this is just the change of radius. This is just the change of radius with time. You should also have the change of phi with time.
That's true. So for deflection angle, what really matters is...
what really matters is the change of phi to r with respect to radius, I guess.
Well, the way I remember solving it is I found the initial and final phi, ended up having to solve a quadratic for them, and then just use those as being, you know, angle in, angle out. And then from that, you get the difference.
So the quadratic equation in phi?
Eventually, but there are some other steps leading up to it, I forget. And the fact that it's a quadratic is how we get the in and out. And
yeah. So I mean, I think that this already shows, almost gives me what I wanted, which is basically giving a factor of 2. The thing that's puzzling me at this point is the minus sign.
Which minus sign?
That, why is this a minus sign? Of course, this is not what we really are interested in is the deflection angle for a fixed impact parameter, right? The impact parameter is essentially that. So the angular momentum is, if this is the same angular momentum as what I had up there, This is going to be e times the velocity, or the initial velocity. This is kind of by definition, because at early times the impact parameter is a minimum distance from the part from the black hole if there was no scattering, if just particle continued without any acceleration. And V0 is the velocity if there was no acceleration initially. And V times V0 is going to be the angular moment. So this is what you have. Okay. Right. Yeah. So this is, we want to describe the angles in terms of this quantity. V times V naught. And V naught is basically dr by dt at plus or minus infinity. So that's more or less actually. So that fixes some of the constants that we needed. Actually, that fixes most of the constants that we need. Because, but that this is L, right? And this constant. Well, it's kind of actually bizarre here because there is no constant left here for photon. So this is all we have for photon. For Newtonian case. For Newtonian case, you can energy is just now here ignoring that my energy is normalized by mass, so this is just V0 squared minus L squared divided by R squared plus 2m over R. And there is a convergence from phi to from phi to t, but the convergence I think is goes the same way for both of these, because dt is t dot times is t dot divided by phi dot times d d phi, I believe. Right. And this is just going to be t dot divided by phi dot is going to be e divided by l by, sorry, by small l. And there is t dot is it's going to be r squared divided by 1 minus 12 over r. And then this is multiplied by d phi. Sorry, by phi dot. It's phi d phi, yes, like that. That's it. Okay. So I suppose, I guess one thing I should do, so maybe that's what saves me, is that if I instead look at dr by d phi, then I get another factor. Okay, so let's see if that's. That's all the problem. Where is the razor? So this is a question for photon. Let's go here. So for non-relativistic particle, a dr by d phi a square. And I use this equation, and I knew that this is just angular momentum. I think this is 1 over angular momentum. So d phi, or sorry, 1 over d phi, 1 over dt is just going to be L squared minus 1 over R. This is for not for this is for Newtonian. I guess for Newtonian this is not really present. This is gonna be just V naught square minus L square divided by R square over R. And for photon I could write the same equation, but then I cannot ignore this for the photon. And for photon what I get is dr by d phi square times l square this is going to be 1 minus 4 m over r minus l square plus r. Okay, so these are. Now I can take this to the other side, and it cancels.
One thing, this R is R to the 4th.
Is it R to the 4th? Yes, it's R to the 4th. Sorry, this is R to the 4th. And just make sure that I'm not mixing something here. So I have to invert this relationship because I want to replace dt by d phi. So whenever dt is square is the inverse of this, the square, and whenever d phi is square. Okay. So this doesn't look much more helpful, does it? Yeah, so somehow there's a factor of 2 that should come out of there, and I'm actually a bit puzzled that it doesn't. Because right now, the way these equations are written, this cancels this, and there is no mass left. So, missing here. Any ideas?
No.
Yeah, I think I made a mistake somewhere
with the questions. I don't know where.
But the idea is that when, at the end of the day, I should get basically the same equations, but one has 2m the other. Minus has 4m instead of 2m in it.
And I don't see where I did, where I made a mistake. It's somewhere.
Anyway, so
I have them by what I was saying.
Okay, well, I give it a shot. I don't know what that, but I,
it's, yeah.
But if these equations should give you the answer, the thing is that it's going to be, at the end of the day, it's going to be very similar equations to the Newtonian case, so you can use the same technique that Mark, I think, described for you, that the particle that basically goes almost on a, in a straight line and calculate the kick that it's receiving.
Yeah, that
would and the kick is the change in momentum of the particle. That gives you the angle, basically. The kick is the change in momentum. The kick is the difference between the initial momentum and the final momentum, which is going to be the momentum times the deflection. So that was the technique that you could use for the Newtonian particle. But since the equations turn out to be more or less almost the same, you could use it for both as well. I am still puzzled by what's. Yeah, so I think what I was thinking that I should get was 1 plus 4m over r instead of 2m over r. At the end of the day, when I compare these two equations, there might be some sort of data I'm missing. But anyway, so this is the way to do it. And yeah, maybe you can figure it out by the next session. But let's see. Let's move on to the problems of this week. And problem number one. Who's gonna do it?
We should probably split it into parts because like problems.
Yeah, problem one is twice as large as the other two combined.
Is that right?
That's how it seemed to me.
You worked out the Einstein tensor, right?
I was concur with that, Bill Black. I worked it out by hand as well.
By Maple?
By hand.
By hand. Oh, you did it by hand. Oh, good. You have hard work and then that's great. So let's have Brian do at least part A and we see how it happens.
Okay.
So, but I don't ask you to derive it on the backboard because it's going to be a while. You can erase anything.
Yeah, just
you can erase.
Part A, essentially just asks us to show the equivalency of gravity in general relativity to Newtonian gravity in the limit of a weak field, and then use this to derive the Poisson equation. But my method, how I approached it, was just showing the equivalency between the two and then what the Poisson equation derived from that in the end. So anyways, first of all, our equations for Newtonian gravity in a more convenient form for us are, first of all, the definition of the potential field. How the potential relates to the motion of particles. Expressing this in tensor form. Okay. In general relativity, our gravity equations, first of all, the equation I started out with is essentially the Einstein equation. I used a different form of it and turned out to be more convenient this way, called the trace reverse form. Here, the K is just a constant for the field strength, which we figure out from the weak field limit, in fact. So we'll just leave it in as a constant. We just have to show that it follows the same laws to the order of a constant and use that to solve for K. And also, to define how things work in general relativity, we have the geodesic equation. Finally, our assumptions for the weak field limit. Let's see. First of all, let's assume that the particle is non-relativistic, and so only the zero portion of its velocity matters when we get to parts working with, you know, how it varies. We only need to worry about the time portion to greatly simplify the tensor work we have to do. So for here, we'll only work with the alpha 0, 0 portion of the geodesic. So let's just say, greatly non-relativistic. Okay. Under that assumption, we get simply significantly in the other dimensions. And then, so we'll put that back into the equation to simplify things as we can. Also express what we have on the left side here by a dt in the bottom and a factor of dt squared, which we then divide out, getting simply getting the acceleration is simply negative the affine connection of this dimension through time twice, or however you express that verbally. Now, going back to our equation up there, we can use this to imply that the affine connection is simply gradient of the tangent, which we'll get back to use later.
So wait a minute, that's the alpha is I, is that the
thing? Well, yeah, oh, sorry, yeah, it should be the same variable. Expressing the affine connection and how we split it up, this is equal to here, of course, g is strictly diagonal, so if I is anything but zero, then these will vanish. And let's see, for the first two parts, we get this essentially ends up as dt of G zero zero for here and here. And let's see, our G zero zero for this. Okay.
So you want to calculate all the all these connections? Is that
no, we just have really the one that we have to calculate with the alpha. I'm just going through calculation for this one. Now, again, for the weak field limit, if we assume that, again, it's not much changing in time, we can set that as being about equal to zero. So we only have to worry about this. And in the end, so we get the negative 1/2. And a
then going back to our collision from before, this implies now, if we're going to go ahead and solve this, this differential equation here, we'll get a solution along the lines of g00 equals a constant, which I'll just put negative c squared as that's the unperturbed value, minus 2 phi, which you can see solves this trivially if we differentiate by x alpha. Now, going back to the Einstein equation, since we're only working with g00 there, we'll only need the 00 component of this equation. Now, T is the stress tensor, and it's defined by, in the T00, we have density, T11, T22, T33 are the pressure, but in the weak field limit, we'll assume we have no pressure, so T00 is just density, and so density and that factor of C4, maybe that would write units. And the scalar T is defined as T mu mu, T mu mu, which since all I'm worrying about is 0, 0. So, in the end, the entire right side of the equation becomes equal to one half rho c to the fourth. We're adding in the c squared term from g00 there, so it's just half this times k. Now, on the other side, we have the Ricci tensor, which is R00, which is equal to a combination of the affine connections. Thank you. Now, the latter two terms here are both second order, which in the weak field are going to play minimal rule. So we just forget about those. And again, the second term here involves derivative with respect to time, which again, we're assuming we're not changing things significantly in time. So we'll assume that's also about zero, giving just R00 equals defining P00 with respect to P. Now, using what we solved before out here, alpha 00 is 5 on the alpha. This is equal to the potential with respect to P twice, or we can change variables as change P whatever variable if we so wish later. Okay, putting this back into our equation from above, we get the result and what did I use before? Yeah, I, so just changing P to I. C to the fourth. And the important thing here is that this follows the same dependence on rho and between phi as our Newtonian case. Up there it's 4 pi g rho. So we just substitute in k equals exactly what we get from the homing gravity.
Perfect. But I've got a question. We have started by seeing what is the weak field limit, okay? And in order to find this limit, we have written the geodesic equation.
Yeah.
We have compared it to the Newtonian.
Yeah.
Equation.
Yeah.
And we have drawn there is a conclusion about the connections,
mm-hmm.
right there. So this is not obvious to me, at least, because I think that the problem wants us to find this relation, because with this. With assuming this, the result becomes obvious because we have assumed that the gammas are the gradients of phi.
Okay. Well, what I'm doing here is it's going from this step to this step.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. What I'm doing here is I'm defining the quantity which we'll call phi comma alpha to be the affine connection. At this point, we haven't called it the gravitational potential. This is just some unknown vector field.
Okay.
So we go.
But you have assumed that you can write your connections as a gradient of vector field, which is an assumption, isn't it?
Not really so much because, well, it's not actually, it's not the gradient of a vector field, it's the gradient of a scalar field.
Of a scalar field, sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and to do that, I guess the biggest assumption is that it has to be smooth in some way.
Mm-hmm.
But no, actually that sounds, if you assume that your metric is diagonal, then that's the only term that's left is gradient of G00, isn't it? That's your gamma.
Yeah.
Your gamma alpha 00 is just the gradient of G00. That's that equation, because if you ignore the orthogonal term, and or you go, if you assume there is no time derivative, I guess that's another. So it's not even that. So that's then given by time. That's automatically a gradient of a scale.
Yeah. And at this point, we don't know that the scalar is going to be the gravitational potential. We're just expressing it in this form to show that the way we expressed it in Newtonian gravity also works here. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so I guess another way to put it is that if you have V00, which is time independent and a small and close to Minkowski, and then you can get the Newtonian equations. But also you can, if you use Einstein equation, you can get Newtonian Poisson equation as well.
Yeah, and the question asks us to get the Poisson equation, but the way I did, I just showed the equivalency and said that the Poisson equation is just derived from the Newtonian equations as normal.
Yeah. Good. So perfect. So this is an equivalence. So the big field equivalent of Newtonian gravity and Newtonian gravity and Einstein generativity. Of course, after if gravity becomes stronger, then you do it on linear terms.
Well, yeah, we have a ton of assumptions here that are valid in that case.
So if we choose, if we start by metric in general relativity, which is like the Minkowski metric, but it's just different in the first term. It has a potential, a small fluctuation in the first term.
Mm-hmm.
And just with this assumption, find the connections and find the Einstein tensor. The Einstein tensor takes a weird form. I had this question. It has zero components in the first line,
uh-huh,
and zero components in the first column.
So could you write, what were the assumptions that you're making? Well, maybe you could write them. Well, thank you, Brian. So let's see. That's what I would have to say. You can just use one of the keyboards. There are some on the right.
You just assume our metric the
Yes.
Okay.
And this is small. So,
with Maple, we find the connections, everything.
Yeah.
We find the Einstein tensor. Takes this form.
Okay.
So as you see, this is well the x and y, so it's x, y, z.
Yes, yes.
And I just look at the diagonal components.
And I guess the Einstein energy momentum tensor, has only zero zero components. There is no zero-zero component here?
So that's why it's weird. Okay.
And
I checked, it's Maple, you shouldn't do something wrong here. But it gives a correct result, actually, strangely.
Well, we also have the Ricci tensor in that problem, correct?
It just directly computes the Einstein tensor.
Yeah, because in that equation, we also have both the Ricci tensor and the stress tensor.
Yes.
And, you know, those play together so that when we solve for the Einstein tensor, we have a zero in that component. They just cancel out with each other, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
Because they follow that equation I wrote up there.
So, yeah, so it agrees with this zero thing.
Yeah.
But no, it cannot because T mu nu
zero, zero, zero.
Yes, that's the only non-vanishing component of T mu is the zero, zero component.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying the Ricci tensor, which also appears in the Einstein equation, would cancel that out.
No, but this is precisely 8 pi T mu.
Because yeah, the equation, so you did it in this other form.
Yeah.
But it doesn't use G mu nu itself. But the question is just G mu nu should be T mu nu.
Okay.
And that, so that has a problem. So why do you say it gives the dark answer?
Because if you just take the trace, sorry, F is the same as 5.
Uh-huh.
If you take the trace,
oh, this is not
it gives 2 times
mm-hmm.
The pi. And the trace of the energy momentum tensor. It just 1 plus u squared, this is c squared. Okay?
Is the f as the same as phi?
Yes.
Phi is f.
Okay.
If the limit is, we go to Newtonian limit, this goes, cancels. This is h pi, so. Because there is also a c here, and the c goes as well. So it gives, strangely, this right correct result. It's a bit strange.
Yes, I think there is something wrong with that. But, well, it turns out this is not the correct metric. The correct metric, and I actually didn't think it would make a difference, but I guess it does make a difference what randomized that equation you use. It is a 1 minus 2 phi over c squared here. So this is a full solution. So I suspect maybe that's part of the problem, but I didn't think that would really enter, because I mean as Brian showed, it's really G00 that enters. This is the 0-0 component of Einstein. So you just wrote the 0-0 component of the Einstein equation. So, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I had it in the more general form, the
yeah.
Trace reverse form works for all components. I just simplified it to 0-0.
Yes. But then I guess, so I suppose that it does make a difference if you do it in these two different ways. I mean, if you do it in the Einstein form or in the Einstein form or the other form, maybe that's part of the problem. So you're sure that this is what you were getting?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's giving a correct answer at the end, but well, the Einstein tensor is weird.
So yeah, no, that's not the right Einstein tensor. So what I suggest that you do is. What I suggest that you do is try plugging this in, and then it should give you the right answer. Because T mu nu is rho 0, 0 versus 0, 0, 0, 0, 0. So these two are not obviously equal, right?
Are obviously unequal.
Yeah, obviously unequal. Yes.
I did something slightly different.
Okay.
I got the right answer to.
Okay, so what did you do?
I assumed that phi is just a function of x, because phi was as assumed that phi is a function of x, y, z. So
uh-huh.
I just assumed phi is a function of x, and I pointed like the Ricci tensor and AKS scalar, and then I substituted into Einstein equation,
uh-huh.
And T 0, 0 is equal to rho, then I get the right answer.
So you get T.
So I use the same metric. Eventually.
Without, okay. Then
just phi is function of x, and that works out.
Okay, so I suppose then there must be said that you must have made a mistake, huh?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
You must have made a mistake, yeah. Yeah, but I guess at the end of the day, it's really,
But the thing is that I think this part doesn't really matter too much for, I mean, certainly the part was not coupled to this, but I don't think this part, look, it really matters what it is, but.
Because the difference of my solution with Nina is that Nina doesn't use the unsigned tensor enable.
Mm-hmm.
So she just finds the Ricci scalar and tensor and she computes the unsigned tensor herself. But I use this function.
Maybe Maple defines the Einstein tensor in some different way.
Yeah, that's possible.
Mm-hmm.
That's bizarre. So how about you guys, the rest of you?
I didn't test similar derivation.
This is similar brand.
Paris,
how about you?
Yeah, I just didn't know how to justify some assumptions I made.
Yeah. But so you use this form of Einstein derivation. Is that right? Okay. So the two R and equivalent, the two R equivalent in general, but if you don't use the correct form, then if you have a wrong form for GRJ, then you get different results from this.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the correct form. And it's not hard to imagine where this comes from because this is like a Schwarzschild metric. Schwarzschild metric has a G00 and a GRJ component. And they have opposite signs because in Schwarzschild metric, this is 1 minus 2m over r, and this is inverse of that. So that's the origin of this. But yeah, so in principle, you need both of them to satisfy that. Okay, so did you guys plug? So how did you plug the Schwarzschild metric into Maple?
Yeah.
Got zero?
Yeah, easily gives like zero.
It just gives zero.
Even in the help of Maple, the
that's
the
example.
That's a much easier way to do this problem.
Yeah. I'm with Brian.
You did it that way.
Yeah, pretty much.
But this is you gotta remember this for the rest of the
time. I've done this. I did this like 3 years ago for a GR.
Okay.
But I mean, like, I forgot.
Okay, for a second. It's like being vaccinated. Like if you do it twice, then you're going to be vaccinated for the rest of the
year. If it doesn't take the first
of course, new strains develop every year, which you have to do slightly differently.
Yeah, that, I don't think I can help with that.
It's rewarding when you have to go to zero, though. I mean, like, you actually go through it and maybe equal zero, and you're like, oh. Okay.
That's good. It's much better to know what to expect. Okay, so the interesting problem is when you do it for the Friedman metric. So this is a metric that you can argue, and I didn't want to make this too long, but you can argue this is if you have a homogeneous and isotropic universe, where basically your space is homogeneous and isotropic, but you can change with time, the universe can evolve with time. This is the most general metric that you can write down. And of course you can write it down in different coordinate systems, but this is all already equivalent to this metric in equation 2. And it's known as Friedman-Roberts-Walker metric. K is is the curvature, a spatial curvature of the space by factor surfaces if you set Pt equal to 0. So if k is 0, then the spatial curvature is 0. Positive k is called a positive k of the space, negative k, negative k is k of the space.
And how have they found this matrix?
Well, it comes from these requirements that if you assume isotropy and homogeneity. So what you do is you can always go to a coordinate system where G00 is 1 and GIJ is G0I is 0. So that's general. It's called the synchronous case. That always can be. I mean, almost always can be done.
Yeah, it's actually pretty simple how they get this. They just have the A term to mean it's expanding in some way. A can be pretty much anything, or it can even be contracting according to the metric. And then the other term, which multiplies R, gives the various values of K, give the different curvatures of space, which you can argue simply from a geometric standpoint that to be homogeneous and isotropic, there are only three possibilities. It's perfectly flat everywhere, it's positively curved, like on the surface of a hypersphere, or it's negatively curved everywhere.
So, yeah. So that's what you get into go through the mass. But it's essentially follows from these two assumptions, the homogeneity and isotropy. So, but I guess what you can do is you just write this. If you see this isotropic, you can just write it down. And this is what leads to what Brian just said. You just assume there's some function of R and R and T, I guess you can say, and the R square. This is Gij, Dxi, Dxj, plus or minus that, depending on your signature. Now, this part comes from a statistical isotropy that you think, since this looks like a sphere, then the angular metric should look like this. And whatever sits here, you can just call it R squared, just as a definition. And all that's left is, or I guess let's see. You can factor out the time dependence. Now, why can we factor out the time dependence? I guess I'm not sure about that.
Well, that's just because it's isotropic, expanding the same in every dimension. It's simply the time multiplies R. And then we've got the dr and the dr squared and the r squared, and time will be the same in both.
So this is, we factor out whatever the time dependence is here. Now this becomes, so let's forget about time. If you forget about time dependence for a moment, just let's say for a particular time, you just look at the spatial section. This is all you have. You have, you call whatever sits in front of this isotropic angular measure R squared, and there is some A of R times the R squared. And the way to find A of R is just to calculate that something that's geometrically observed, to geometric scalar. For example, the curvature of this metric, the Ricci curvature, Ricci scalar of this metric. And if you set that to be a constant, then that gives you this particular form, 1 minus 1 divided by 1 minus 3r squared. Where k is that constant, it's basically the Ricci curvature of this metric. But remember, this is Ricci curvature or Ricci scalar of the spatial part of the metric, not the full metric.
And how is it different from the Schwarzschild metric? Because there we had also assumptions about.
Well, this metric just goes with expanding space. We don't have any mass in there. Schwarzschild is near the presence of a point mass.
Yes.
So the difference is, physically that's
the difference in the derivation, because there too we assumed homogeneity.
Yeah, so the difference is that there you are assuming that a space-time curvature is zero. A space-time Ricci tensor basically is zero. Here we are assuming that the spatial Ricci scalar is constant. So, and they come from different assumptions. The first one we assume that you're in a vacuum, right? So that means that since you're satisfying Einstein equation, it means R mean U should be zero and R should be zero. And basically, I think setting the total of the space-time R to zero, that's enough to give you the form for A of R. Of course, in Schwarzschild metric, you don't set, you can go to a gauge where dt squared doesn't have a pre-factor, but that's not a very nice case. In Schwarzschild metric, you also solve for this guy as well, for the pre-factor of this.
Yeah.
That's...
Or I think one way of describing this, the FRW metric is with the mass being distributed homogeneously across all space. Schwarzschild is in the presence of just a point mass and vacuum elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. So that's physically a difference. Mathematically, that's the difference. That one, you satisfy vacuum Einstein equation. The other, you just require that there is statistical isotropy. So I guess you could say that the derivations, one is a dynamical derivation in the sense you want to satisfy Einstein equation. The other is just a kinematical. You just require kinematical derivation for the Friedmann. So because you assume some symmetries, and then this is the kind of that you can explain. Now then the next step, it's enough, but I didn't ask you to do this. This is what I didn't ask you to do. What I did ask you to do is to plug this into the Einstein equation and come up with Friedmann and derive Friedmann equations from that. So who's going to do that for me? All right. So I guess probably you all know this, but this is known as a cosmological principle that universe is humans, at least on a larger scale, is homogeneous and isotropy. And but that doesn't need to be the case, but that makes life much easier. And we don't really have any evidence. Hello.
Hi.
Do you have a meeting here?
Yeah. I thought you took a break from 11:30 to 12:30.
Oh, it's actually 12 to 1 more recently.
Well, I guess we can do that. Yeah, but I guess so. You have a plan from 11:30 to 12:30?
Sorry, they put us in here.
Okay. So we can do our old schedule this week. Okay. Awesome. Sorry, Horace. So we'd meet back at 12:30 then. And